Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The brothers Anderson are. This is Eric, he's the oldest one. The producer who makes it fun, gotta give him the credit. He's good with the edits. He's been the driving force since they begun. Next we got brother Jay. He just the movies that they play. The sip in the middle, Jay is gonna be a little more critical, analytical when he communicates. And lastly we got Drew, the finally family member of this group. He decides if the movie's worth it. Right kind of guy, that's for certain. Three chatty brothers with a family base. Need an excuse to talk away. Dichotomy of personalities. All you really need to do is press play. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies till they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open to that kiss. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way.
Welcome, this is brother Jay.
And this is Drew.
And in this episode of our podcast, brother E is taking this episode off. So brother Drew and I are reviewing 2014 drama. Is it a drama-ish?
Yeah, drama, romance.
Yeah, I guess it's a drama romance. Beyond the Lights.
Yes, I was trying to figure out for our Halloween episode, we should probably watch a movie not very many people have heard of that has nothing to do with Halloween. Just kind of take our mind off the existential dread that is not only the concept of people trick-or-treating during a global pandemic, but also the forthcoming presidential election that might decide whether or not we're going to remain a functional society. So what better movie to celebrate all of that than Beyond the Lights?
Had you ever seen this movie before?
I had not.
So this is a new movie for you. A new, yes. You know, I think we've discussed before this is bad when neither of us has seen it. But anyway, we'll go into it.
This is a movie that I had wanted to watch for a long time and had high hopes of.
So let me ask you, what drew you to this movie? And I'm not knocking your choice. I'm just because it doesn't seem to me like a movie that would call to you. So what drew you in? What pitch really hooked you?
Here's what I heard about the movie. A sort of modern update of The Bodyguard in the current world of hip-hop/pop.
Okay. I can get with that. So we'll just spoil it right out of the gate. I thought this was a fine movie. But I also felt like I've seen this movie many different iterations. So this was just kind of another flavor of the same kind of movie. It had some different plot points, but it was the same kind of, love interest meets other love interest. One love interest has a problem. They get pushed apart by that problem. And then the other love interest spends the rest of the movie trying to get that back. And that's kind of a trope. The Bodyguard, I guess, is one. Like Stella Got Her Groove Back is another one from like the 90s, I think. 90s, 2000s.
I've never seen that.
So the kind of the same kind of feel. And I'm sure there's myriad example of this kind of plot. Again, I don't think it was a bad movie. I thought it was fine. I was interested. The actors were compelling for the most part. I like most of the cast. The music wasn't terrible. Wasn't great, but it wasn't awful. I mean, some of it was good, but and it moved and it was entertaining. It was longer than I had expected, though. So the movie stars, I don't even know how to say her name, Gugu Mbatha-Ra.
Oh, that sounds great. Okay. Very well done.
I don't even know. As Noni, Nate Parker as Kaz, Minnie Driver as Macy Jean, and Machine Gun Kelly as Kid Culprit, and Danny Glover as Captain Nickel. So, and that's just the top kind of the top billing.
Yeah, I'll say I think as it turns out, I probably like this movie more than you. But I thought everybody, all the actors in this movie gave really good performances. Even you laughed when you read the credit, but even Machine Gun Kelly, he was just so despicable and unlikable. I think he did a really good job leaning into that. I have no baseline for what his persona is outside of this movie, but I believe 100% that he's like that.
I was going to say, it's hard to know because I don't know anything about him. Or if I do, I don't know that it's him. Pandora's ruined me for artists, so I could have heard a song and I'd not even know that it's him. So, I don't know how far from real life or his life as Kid Culprit was Machine Gun Kelly, you know. So it's hard to know how much of it was a stretch as an actor or if it was just really kind of be yourself and we'll kind of film around the rest. I like Minnie Driver. I've seen her in plenty of things.
I'll say this about Machine Gun Kelly, by the way. He is no Brian Austin Green. I don't care. I don't care what's her name? What's his wife? Megan Fox. I don't care what Megan Fox thinks about him.
So I think, that went right past me. God, how old is this movie? So Minnie Driver, Gross Point Blank was 97, and that's one of the movies. She was in Good Will Hunting in 97. Mm-hmm. She was in Sleepers in 96. She was in Goldeneye in 95. Circle of Friends in 95. I think Circle of Friends is when I really, that was the first movie that I saw her in that I remembered. I remembered her. I know she was in other stuff that I saw, but up to that point, I didn't. She never stuck with me. But Circle of Friends.
It was Good Will Hunting for me.
Circle of Friends had, I'm going to have to look it up. Alan Cummings, right? Alan Cumming. Yeah. Chris O'Donnell.
Yeah.
Minnie Driver, Saffron Burroughs, Alan Cumming, Colin Firth. So that was a movie. I don't, have you ever seen it?
I've seen a long, long time ago. My wife liked that movie quite a bit when we were in college.
It's a rough movie. So, I mean, it was good. Don't get me wrong, but it was a rough movie. So, plot summary. Let's see.
Yeah. So it starts off with Minnie Driver trying to get her daughter's hair done. Her young, like 8-9-year-old daughter's hair done.
Which in the open was really kind of heartbreaking.
Which part?
The fact that she couldn't do her own daughter's hair. I mean, yeah. Just that to me, right out of the gate, I was like, oh, this is, I was worried. I'm like, oh, this is going to be how this movie is. Like, oh, it sets a tone. Because I can't imagine what that would be like. Mm-hmm. You know, just struggling mom. Obviously, she was single mom, having trouble trying to get life together. And she just needed to get her kid's hair done in a way that could be done because she didn't have the skills or knowledge to do it.
All right.
And ostensibly this would have still been the days before Google, right? And YouTube.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it was 98.
Yeah. Because Jamiroquai was playing on the radio and I was so thrilled because I'm a huge Jamiroquai fan.
Isn't that guy's name Jason?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Virtual reality was the song, I think. And the video for that is just, I love that video. Virtual insanity. Right.
Yeah.
That whole album is amazing, but that video for that is just stupid crazy. I love it.
Back in the era when artists still made cool videos.
Because for the most part, he stands still and the set moves around him.
Yep.
So that's a cool video. But, so Noni, is taken to get her hair done by mom. And of course she shows up and the hairdresser's like, I'm leaving. I'll be back tomorrow. And, you know, she makes the plea because she's like, she's got a talent show and we got to get her hair done. And so the hairdresser asks her, what song are you going to do? And she says, I'm going to do, you know, Blackbird by Nina Simone. And then of course the hairdresser relents and does her hair. And then we moved into the talent show, which she performs, which was difficult to watch because I think it was very quickly telegraphed that you knew she wasn't going to win.
Right.
Before it was even over.
Right. Even though she was the best.
Yes. And so that made me instantly uncomfortable for any multitude of reasons, not the least of which is because, of course, I'm white and guilty. So it was a gut punch. And then, so she doesn't win. She comes in second place. And Mom goes berserk, pretty much. Although not quite full-out berserk, just kind of berserk. And drags her out of the talent show, and they leave. They go to take off. And then...
Yeah, that's the thing about Minnie Driver's performance. On the surface, it kind of seems monstrous. But if you think about it, you know, she's not wrong.
No.
She certainly doesn't take her daughter's feelings into account. But she's not wrong about what's going on.
No, she's totally not wrong. But you're right, when she doesn't take her daughter's feelings into account, when she makes her smash the trophy that she just won because second place isn't good enough.
Right. And she clearly deserved first place.
Yeah, which I don't know. I'm not a parent, but I don't know how you felt watching that scene, but
it broke my heart.
It made my soul ache. Like, I can't imagine I can't imagine. I mean, physically pained me watching it. And I know it was acted. I mean, mm-hmm. You know, I tried to take myself out of the movie, but still I was like, oh, the gut punch. Like, okay, here we go again. This is another gut punch. So I was really worried at this point in the movie. I thought, oh no, it's going to be 2 hours of this.
I think I'd have to go back and watch to make sure, but I think that in that entire opening, the daughter, young Noni, aside from singing, she only says one word the whole time. And it's when her mother tells her to chuck the trophy. She just goes, why? And it's just heartbreaking, but she does it.
Well, I mean, I'd be afraid of Mom at that point. If she were my mom, I mean, she was a force.
Yeah.
And then we flash forward to Noni, the artist, in the middle of pandemonium, in the middle of a music set, the awards show.
Yeah, venue. They're playing a music video of her and the rapper Kid Culprit. So a collaboration of the two of them. And this really gave me mid 2000s era, Timbaland and Carrie Hilson vibes. Like, it seemed like the Noni character was an aged down version of Carrie Hilson.
I'm not familiar with her by name, so
she a little bit like Skylar Grey too. Tremendous vocalist who does a lot of hooks on rap and hip hop songs, but is way, way better than that vocally.
Gotcha. And it still appears at this point in Noni's life that her mother is still running everything.
Oh yeah.
Her mother is managing everything and stage directing and maneuvering people around and controlling situations and timelines and events and any number of things. And Noni seems to she just goes along with it. She's kind of like a hostage almost. She's
a
passenger.
Yeah. Her mom doesn't even react when, this is another thing that just really disturbed me as a parent, when Kid Culprit, the scuzzy, awful rapper dude, is just like pawing all over her and just like slobbering on her face. The mom is just like standing there waiting for it to be done so she can give Noni her next set of instructions. And it was like, oh, it just made me want to do the Brad Pitt from Fight Club gesture. The yeesh.
So the Noni goes back to the hotel where she's staying at the after show, after party. I assume that the implication was there was going to be an after party, maybe.
Yeah, she had her people, her like wardrobe and makeup people following her, so that they could get her ready for the after parties, but she wouldn't let them in.
Because Kaz, the guard, the cop, is at the door, and she tells them, Noni tells them, nobody comes in.
Yeah, and this is, he's like, he's off duty, right? He's like moonlighting as security, right, as an off duty cop.
That's what I assumed. Nobody goes in except Noni, and she shuts the door, and the other people wander off, and Mom's there after talking to the people before they wander off, and they're like, hey, she won't let us in, and Mom's like, well, you go and come back in half an hour, and blah, blah, blah. So she basically browbeats Kaz, who probably, I'm not sure how he knew to let her in, but apparently he did. Know well enough to let her in. So lets her into the room. And then of course it's off screen. We hear her screaming that, you know, what the hell is Noni trying to do? And it turns out Noni is on the balcony ledge dangling over.
Silently crying.
And she had been drinking on her way back from the after party, but Kaz hears the commotion and rushes to the balcony and tries to reason with her and make contact with her in a way that at least he can distract her or seemingly move her along so she doesn't jump off the edge, through some intense kind of psychological interactive conversational jujitsu and some emotional manipulation, but she still goes over the edge.
Yep.
After some struggling, not so half-hearted struggling, I guess.
Yeah, she says, "You still can't see me," and then she just kind of slips off the edge.
She's dangling off the edge, and he convinces her to take his hands, and he pulls her back up over the ledge.
While the mom is freaking out in the background.
Of course. But when you think about it, the mom probably couldn't have pulled her up, so.
Nope. I'm actually impressed Kaz could pull her up. But then later, you actually get to see, like, his just massive, like, Captain America guns.
Yeah.
What crap.
Ew, that was definitely a trip to the gun show. So of course, because this is the kind of movie, there's a spark at that point because he has saved her.
Of course there is.
So.
And honestly, I thought they actually had really good chemistry in this movie.
I do too. I did too.
There were a couple times due to plot mechanics when they were, like you mentioned, as happens in any kind of like romantic drama, they are pushed apart by circumstances or misunderstandings. And during those times, I didn't like it. Like I was physically like yearning for them to get back together. So that's how I knew that this movie was effective.
And see, I was the opposite. I knew that they were always going to be together no matter what.
Oh, sure.
No matter what was happening in this movie, so I didn't have any suspense as far as that was concerned. I was more interested in what all the other people were going to do around them. So I was really kind of watching the environment that they were in and watching the other people. And so I think I may have watched the movie a little differently in that aspect, not on purpose. It's just how I watched it. So I'm not trying to elevate, like I had some austere ability to stir past all of this. Cause it wasn't, it was just my brain. That's where my brain went. So,
yeah, I mean, I didn't know what kind of movie this was, so I wasn't sure that they're going to end up together, but I knew pretty early on that if they did not wind up together at the end, I was going to find this movie to be completely unsatisfying.
So he saves her.
Yeah, but people saw her hanging over the balcony. Because
of course,
because
the tabloids are hanging around the hotel, and there's going to be an after party, right?
Yeah, she is so famous. She is besieged by paparazzi at all times.
Yeah. And the mother gives him, and eventually ends up giving Kaz a check, right?
Well,
she gives it to the dad.
Yeah, she doesn't give it to him. She gives it to the captain, who is his father. And it's made out to, like, the L.A. Police Association. Yeah, like a $10,000 check to the police charity.
To keep his mouth shut.
Yeah, not just to keep his mouth shut, but to actually perpetuate the lie that they're going to spew at the press conference.
Yeah. So they have a couple... I don't know if you can call them tender moments, but they have some moments before this. And it's clear that it's clear at this point that Noni's got a couple things wrong with her mentally. She's got some issues.
Mm-hmm.
And she seems starved for affection, and she's pretty much reaching out for anything that will give her attention, what she perceives as positive attention. But I think that may be because she doesn't get any positive attention from her mother. So her mother's kind of pushing her into where she's headed.
But she has no agency.
No, not at all. And so she's flirting with Kaz, and I don't think she even knows why she's doing it. And I don't even think at this point in the movie she's serious about flirting with him. She's just flirting with him maybe to mask embarrassment, or that's just how she acts.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost out of habit or muscle memory, because
right,
she is so media trained that whenever she has to be on, she just slips into this media ready persona where it's all like cleverness and quips.
Yeah, it just kind of rolls off of her, like that's just how she is, right?
Yeah.
And so they have a press conference, and he is not real thrilled. He's not really hip on the fact that he's going to have to lie, because he doesn't want to lie. And so she spins the narrative, and the press kind of doesn't take it. And the mom gets kind of snippy, and he steps up and says something, which is not, it's kind of in the middle. It wasn't really a lie, but it wasn't really the truth. So
he left out important bits so that his version would support her story, that she was just partying and had too much to drink and slipped over the edge of the balcony.
Well, I think, yeah, she's partying, had too much to drink, and went over the balcony.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, all of those are true statements, but she didn't go over the balcony because she was drunk. She went over the balcony because she was trying to kill herself.
Right.
That was the detail that gets left out. And there's a lot of even at this point in the movie, there's a lot of, I don't know if you noticed, there's a lot of back and forth glances between Noni and Kaz.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, there's a lot of flirtatious eye contact and body language, which I was actually, that was really impressive from the actor's standpoint, because that's chemistry, right? To me, that's seemingly chemistry between the actors.
Right.
So that was a good choice in casting.
The other thing I liked about Kaz is, you know, this movie makes the subtext actual text, because many people throughout the movie keep calling him a Boy Scout, and he's that kind of like aspirational dude who, is super healthy, lives a clean life, memorizes lots of inspirational quotes, wants to be a politician. But even though he's this just like archetypal Boy Scout, he's got a dark side, and he's got a temper that he really tries to keep under wraps at all time. And he lets it out when he's like under the most stress. And I like that aspect of it. It made what would have otherwise been just like an unbelievable character, way more grounded. Like after the press conference where he's pissed that he felt like he had to lie. And then she's trying to flirt with him and he's actually pretty mean to her.
Yeah, he shuts her down. I mean, in no uncertain terms, he shuts her down.
Yeah, and not just shuts down the flirting, but actually tells her that when he looks at her, he sees nothing.
Yeah, I mean, that's full bore, like weird, like scorched earth, right?
Yeah.
Which I don't think she's used to anybody talking to her like that. So,
I mean, maybe her mom.
Right, but no male figures in her life ever have reacted to her like that. They all want a piece of her.
Right.
In one turn of phrase or another. So, but he doesn't. He's like, no, I lied. I don't do that. And you made me. So that's where we are. So that was the hotel, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes home. Is that right? Is that the next step?
Yeah, I mean the next major plot point is Noni and her mother's meeting with the record executives. The record
executive
who are going to delay her album, which was supposed to come out, I think, that week. They're going to delay it because they think the rumor is that she committed suicide, she tried to commit suicide, and even though she's denying it, and they spun a good story at the press conference, the executive thinks it'll damage record sales because she tarnished her image.
She's not the wholesome.
She's damaged. Yeah, she's damaged goods. So the mother promises an unbelievable performance at the BET Awards in a couple weeks, so that they'll maintain the record release on a schedule,
which turns up the pressure.
Yep.
And so he's then meeting with people to decide his future in politics. And we meet more of his dad.
Yeah, this is a really small part by Danny Glover, but I thought he did such a great job.
I don't think it was that small a part, though, because he was in a fair bit of the movie.
He had several scenes, but they were all pretty short.
Yeah, but they were all very pivotal. I mean, they were all very important to the story because it gives you his background and where his drive, not necessarily all of his drive comes from, but the directions that he's headed in, the trajectory that he's gotten is because he's been slingshotted from his dad.
Yeah, his dad was a career policeman who's now at the rank of captain. And it's obvious that he has been grooming his son to be something that he perceives as greater than he was. So he has plotted a path for him to become someone who wields true power in government. So they set him on a course where he studied political science. And then now he's in law enforcement, and then he's going to go into local government and eventually on his way to the White House.
Yeah, which it could happen, right? And so there's that kind of subplot running in the background, and he's learning.
That's really a parallel track with what Noni's on. It's just different kinds of pressure, but very similar parental pressure to be something that maybe would not have been his first choice.
Right. And doesn't give him a chance to be in control of his life, which is where his anger comes from sometimes.
Right. And the meeting you were just talking about with, they never said what that lady was, but she's like a campaign manager before he has a campaign. And not only was he pissed about having to lie at the press conference, but now he's gained such notoriety because of it that his public Q score is up so much that they think now might be the time for him to announce running for local councilman or something.
Yeah, because somebody else was potentially stepping down and
all of this. She was going to get indicted.
Yeah. which is really cynical view of politics, but unfortunately in this day and age, it's a little on the nose too. So
it really is.
And this movie is 6 years old. So, prophetic.
So Kaz, goes to a fundraising event where his father and his political handler are trying to introduce him to influential community members and as a dog and pony show. But all he can think about is apologizing to Noni.
He's distracted.
Yeah. So he actually leaves. He goes to the bar to get a beer. And he sees a news story about her, and he just leaves. He leaves to go find her at her hotel. And the guy who he was covering for the night, he was on duty outside her door when she was on the balcony.
Ostensibly his partner, right?
Is it his partner? That was unclear to me. I guess you're right.
I think so, because they were together several times. So I think they're partners in the day.
Yeah. Another great actor. He played Detective Aceveda on The Shield. Just an iconic performance on that show.
He won't let Kaz in.
No, man. He's a pro.
Yeah.
and kind of a jerk.
Yeah, and Kaz is really turning on the train. He's pulling out every stop, right?
He brought him a coffee.
Yeah.
He flashes him the smile.
Boss move. Mm-hmm. It's like, nope, no entry. But then he just tells him, just wait downstairs.
Well, he tells him to go hang out by the groupies if he wants a chance at seeing her.
Right, but it turns out that was the right thing, right?
But Kaz is just going home. He's waiting for his car, and the valet is taking too long. And Noni is leaving because her mother is ushering her out, and she just happens to see him.
Because they have an engagement, purportedly, of something to go to, right?
Right, yeah. Because she's always got some other event that she's dragged to by her mother.
Yeah, because she's not in control of her life at all. And so she sees Kaz and they have a little interaction. He apologizes and turns on the charm, right? It's mm-hmm. like Charm Factory. And then they have that little flirting and he goes to leave and she takes off with him.
Yeah.
She's like, go, 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 go. Right. Mm-hmm. And so they take off and they drive out and they get fried chicken, right?
Mm-hmm. Some fast food.
Fast food. Her favorite thing, she says.
I don't believe either one of them ever eats fast food.
It didn't look like fast food, though.
It was like local, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It looked fine to me.
It looked great.
Yeah.
It made me hungry. Yeah.
I haven't been out at a restaurant in I don't know how long.
About 7 months.
I was trying to think like the last time I was out, and it was February 1st, yeah. Probably. I mean, that's probably the last time. So, but I digress before we end up back. Attention. So they're eating in the cab of his truck. And they're flirting and they're having fun.
Airport, right? Watching the planes go.
Watching the planes. And I actually wrote that down. I'm like, oh, this harkens back to the days of Drew and Eric.
Yeah.
That's what it reminded me of. So they're watching the airplanes take off. And then Noni sees that he's got a business card from one of the tabloids.
Well, but before that, we find out that Kaz has never been on a plane because he has a fear of flying.
Well, not a fear of flying as much as he has a fear of putting his life in other people's hands.
Again, making the subtext text.
Yeah, this movie isn't big on subtlety.
No.
Yeah, which is fine, though, but because it's charming in how it does it.
This movie is extremely earnest.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not... it's not ham-handed. I think in a lesser set of actors and a lesser kind of production, this would be cheesy and bad. But they pull it off, right? Mm-hmm. Seemingly. I mean, that's what I think. So, but she, you know, they're talking, and yeah, he says, "Hey, I've never been on a plane." And she's like, "What? How can you have never been? Like, that's not possible." He's like, "Nope." And then the business card from the tabloids, and she freaks out, right? Mm-hmm. You know, she just immediately assumes he's like every other guy that's ever been around her. And so she just goes from zero to, you know, a Brazilian right there.
zero to how much money do you want? My mom will cut you a check to keep her mouth shut.
Right. Which is really kind of harsh and cynical, right? Mm-hmm. Which is it was painful. It was painful to be watching that. Knowing that that is in no way what he was doing, but knowing that that's all she knows, right?
Right.
That's her interaction with men, is that they worm their way in and they find a way to use her in some way, and then they get paid off. And so it's just another transaction to her.
Yeah. And he makes it very clear by yelling at her that he doesn't want her money.
Yeah.
And then just starts the car, waits for her to put on her seatbelt, which is pretty cute.
And then drives her back to
her place. She gives him an address, and it's a house that was just built for her, that has not been occupied yet, it looks like.
It looked like a pretty nice house.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't turn it down. I got a nice house, hopefully, knock on wood. Yeah, so they go back to her place, and they...
She realizes she made a mistake.
Yeah, she tries to back the truck up, not very gracefully. But he is pretty much smitten, so he backs down.
Yeah, as Eric would say, juicy got him crazy.
Oh dear God. Sorry, I have vapor lock now. I can't remember. This movie started to bleed together at this point for me. So they're in the house, and then they schmooze around, and then he leaves, right?
Yeah, she kind of gives him a half apology, gives him a smooch, and then sends him on his way.
Yeah. And then the next morning, it's a whole bunch of, you know, Officer Boy Scout, right?
Yeah, he's getting some ribbing from the guys at work. And now paparazzi is following him as well. Because he is Officer Hero. This is where they go out on the domestic violence call, right?
Yeah. And so...
it's the only time we really see him, like, at work on the job.
Which was a little jarring.
Yeah, because they cut right to the middle of him and his partner, Aceveda. Well,
yeah.
Making an arrest in a house where a man has obviously like punched and bloodied the woman he lives with in front of the children.
Yeah, which is always difficult. I mean, I assume it's difficult for many people to watch. Really difficult for me to watch. Even though I know it's fake in a movie, it just upsets me. So mission accomplished there. But yeah, you're right. You get to see him in kind of his compassionate cop mode, maybe, because he's impressing upon the wife that it, you know, doesn't matter if you want to press charges, he's going to jail, right?
Yeah, well, his bedside manner might need some tweaking. Because when when she's like, "I'm okay, it's okay," he says, "Look at your kids, it's not okay."
Which leads one to believe that he's got some baggage.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
but we don't learn any of that backstory. So his backstory is only alluded to, and there's no mom around, so...
Nope.
I give them credit for not feeling like they had to throw something in.
Yeah, this is not the type of movie where we need backstories for everybody fleshed out.
No. Yeah, we didn't need threads everywhere. Yeah. So it was a good choice on their part. And then... So then he has that, and then he and Noni are hanging out more.
Yeah, because she, when they're taking that guy back to the precinct, she comes and grabs him at work, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And his partner's like, go, man. Let's just go.
Yeah. So there were a couple times. One time she showed up at his house and took him out for the day. And he got to watch her, like, practice her choreography and do a photo shoot and stuff. And that might have been the time where they were kind of...
The box of lyrics.
They were kind of making out, and then he asked her about Kid Culprit, right?
Yeah.
And she said that they were together, and he was not okay with that, so he kind of left in a huff. And when she grabbed him at work, he's still pretty pissed off, but she tells him that she broke up with him. She broke up with Kid Culprit, which she did. We got to see that.
We got to see that, and it was a bizarre scene for me to watch because it didn't go how I expected it.
Right,
he played it right off, right?
Yeah, he seemed to be chill and cool with it and understanding. Here's where we get the Arrested Development narrator to say he was not understanding
and not fine with it
and very definitely not chill about it.
Yeah. And then they have like smoochy time and
yeah. So yeah, she picks him up from his job and tells him that she broke up with Kid Culprit and then blindfolds him and tricks him onto a private plane.
In a seduction act.
Yes. Yeah. So his first time in a plane is on a private jet where he joins the Mile High Club.
Very awkward.
Yeah.
It was a little awkward. Yeah. I mean, it was different. It seemed a little... Totally different. It didn't seem like it was necessary.
Yeah. I mean, we all get where it was going. He is now full on her boyfriend, and she's taking him on the red carpet to BET Awards, and he gets to watch from the side of the stage while she gives her breakout performance, which is really supposed to launch her solo career.
And is this where the whole performance takes place?
Yeah.
So she's on stage and she's clearly reticent as they're dressing her for the performance.
And yeah. Cause her outfit is like underwear. With
trench coat.
With a trench coat. And during her routine, her dancers are supposed to pull the trench coat off. But during the performance, she doesn't let them. She stays.
She kind of
the whole time
decides that she's not going to be, she doesn't want to be that displayed in front of her new boyfriend. Mm-hmm. Right. Which is funny because she's giving a performance in front of tons of people. So, okay, we get that. But Mr. Rapper Boy does not like this.
No.
And while they're performing, it's very obvious that, uncomfortably, by the way, very, very difficult to watch as their interaction is, she's kind of trying to be professional and he's keeping it going. And then he's just downright abusive.
Yeah, he assaults her on camera.
Yeah. And things kind of get out of control and crazy. And Kaz steps in, right, to just stop it. Like,
well, after the song, Kid Culprit takes the mic and tells everybody that that he dumped her. He did not get cheated on. He cut her off, and that's why she tried to kill herself.
Yeah, which is not true. But
right.
It, you know, it makes good press, right? And there are some words exchanged and some tension, and Kaz just decks him.
Yep.
Which is really satisfying, by the way. I won't lie.
Not only did Noni's career get derailed right then, but then so did his.
Yep. Oops. So they're kind of on parallel trajectories.
Yeah. So she's, while she is getting the phone call along with her mother that her record label is dropping her.
Yeah. Oops.
And the album is not going to get released. He is getting a dressing down from his dad. For ruining his chances to get endorsed by the local community members.
Well, the local religious leaders, right?
Right.
And so dad's not happy.
Nope.
Because seemingly Kaz has just undone all of these little pieces of future that he thinks he's put together for his son. His son is now basically just set on fire.
Mm-hmm.
And not a lot of water to put the fires out. So not great. And then he decides that, she's clearly,
she has a full on breakdown.
Yeah. She's not having a good time.
She's smashing glass with her hand.
Yeah. And so in an interesting and unexpected, not entirely unexpected, but it was a nice bit of subterfuge that he smuggles her out of the house, right?
Yeah.
And goes home and gets his dog and rifles through his stuff and gets some belongings and some money and takes off. And we find out that she was hiding in the back seat the whole time, which, you know, I'll give him credit. That's smart. Avoid the paparazzi. Right. And then they drive to Mexico.
That's how, you know, it was, he really had extremely strong feelings for her because he drove her around and did not make her wear a seatbelt.
And I'm not complaining, but I don't understand the dog. I don't understand why the dog.
I think it's just to give him more of a personality.
I mean, it was fine, but it was distracting me because I kept thinking, what's going to happen? Why is this dog here?
The dog to die.
Or I expected the dog to bite her or something, you know? Like, I don't know what's going on. The dog dying, that would have been the end for me. I would have stopped watching. That would have been like, I'd be like, F you, movie. And then I would have been and sent you an angry series of texts.
No, I mean, the dog is his only friend, right?
Pretty much. I mean, we don't see him with any kind of life because it's either his dad, his work, or campaigning, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And his dad's been, the entire time, his dad's been like, here, you have to be right, and you have to do this, and you have to not do that. And so, yeah, he's got nothing.
Mm-hmm. So I don't know about you, but Mexico was my favorite part of the movie.
Well, it was a tonal shift.
Yeah.
I mean, it it really did turn the movie kind of on an axis, right?
Mm-hmm.
They were in another country and they were alone. And then, you know, they're spending some time in this very kind of, you know, clearly low rent motel, which is fine. Nothing wrong with that. I think most of us have been in places like that at one point in our lives. Sometimes on purpose, sometimes not. I'm thinking Sturgis.
Good times.
For me, it was the Hotel Regina. So,
yeah.
With the 8.5 by 11 white piece of paper with Sharpie written on it. No guests after 9 p.m.
It's binding that way.
Yeah.
When it's on Sharpie.
And a shower with those little flower applique traction strips.
Oh, those are the best.
and a TV that had a dial still. Yeah, and threadbare towels. It was the seediest, most rundown place. But Dad and I were both so tired, neither of us cared.
The place Dad and I stayed in Wyoming that I refused to even take a shower in had one of those old cable boxes on top with like the push down switches.
So it's a little behind the times.
A little bit. I mean, that was the mid-90s, which yeah. Still very behind the times.
Yeah. So so they're in this charming little seaside motel in Mexico. And she decides to quite literally let her hair down, right?
Yeah, she takes out all her purple extensions. She looks so different.
She looks completely different. In fact, when she had taken all of that off, I recognized her.
Yeah. Yeah. She's been in other stuff.
Well, she's been, so I don't, you probably haven't seen it, but The Morning Show.
I've not seen it. She was in The Cloverfield Paradox.
She's been in lots of stuff. I mean, I like her. She's in The Morning Show and she's great.
Well, she's good in this.
Yeah, it's an amazing show. I recommend it. It won't be what you expect. So Noni takes her hair extensions out and she's very pretty.
Yeah, she gets rid of all the makeup and the fake nails and everything. And
she looks great. And of course, you know, she's still made up. But I mean, she looks great. She looks, mm-hmm. And he, I think, like, he loves her even more. At this point, he's like, this is the real you. Mm-hmm. And there's some good emote that goes on.
Yeah, I mean, they have serious chemistry.
Right. That's what I thought, too.
Yeah.
Okay. And then they go to, like, this street market. And, you know, she's like, you have to have this bracelet. And he's like, no, this is too expensive. We're not buying this. And there's no way. And you don't have any money. You're broke, you know. And she's like, no, I got these diamond earrings. And he's like, what are you doing? She's trying to like barter her thousands of dollars of diamond earrings for like this $40 silver bracelet, right?
Yes, I think you're being very generous about the bracelet.
Maybe it was 40 pesos. I don't know. I was yeah. just, it was 40 yeah. something. Mm-hmm. But you know, they have an altercation. And finally, he relents and just buys it. And she kind of gives it to him. With a very sweet kind of award, right? She gives him a litany of praise and very cogent series of observations about what he has done that has made him such a great guy.
Yep, she was paying attention. She calls it a merit badge, you know,
which
because he's a Boy Scout.
Yeah, so that was really kind of poignant. I thought, oh, wow, she's like, oh, that's nice. She's acknowledging all those things that he did.
Yeah, not only was it very sweet, but it also demonstrated to him that she doesn't care about the material stuff, no matter what her stage persona was.
Yeah.
Like she didn't give a crap about the earrings.
No. But also one could say if she's spoiled enough to think that she always has money, the earrings might not have been material to her anyway.
True.
I mean, you know, there's a little bit of both, but... and then they decide to go to his little favorite karaoke bar, right?
Yeah.
Which I don't think he's ever sang at before. It's unclear whether he's had that experience before, or if he just sits and drinks and
he does not seem like the karaoke type.
And yet he does, which was grueling. It was painful. It was difficult. It was very difficult to sit through. And then, you know, she goes up on stage and of course, which.
And for the most part, she is unrecognizable as pop star Noni at this point.
Sure. Cause she's like, you know, Superman and Clark Kent, right?
Mm-hmm.
And of course, she belts out Blackbird in a dramatic kind of breakdown, crying, jag fit finale of a song. And just, of course, blows away this little bar crowd, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then they go back to the motel. And
she was great. That was a great performance. She's actually doing the singing, that actress.
It was great. I mean, it was a great performance.
Yeah. I mean, I knew exactly what the movie was trying to do. It was being extremely manipulative and trying to tug at my heartstrings, and it fucking worked.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was ham-handed in some ways, but it was fine. Like, mm-hmm. The ham was good.
Yeah. It was so, like, sincere in a way that almost makes me uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not known for my sincerity, so when I'm witness to it, it just makes me uncomfortable.
So they go back to the motel and they're kind of hanging out and knock on the door and they're teasing each other about who has to get the door. And he's like, I'm not getting the door. You get the door. And she goes to get the door and it's all of the paparazzi and mom. Right. Mm-hmm. And so everything has just, the world has just come back.
Yep.
And so mom comes in and she's like, well, I found you like everybody else found you, stupid, on YouTube. Because would you think that was going to not get noticed?
Oh, by the way, did you notice that the like telenovela that they were watching on TV? That was the same actors who were in the bar, right?
I thought so.
I'm almost positive.
Yeah.
Reusing actors.
But I love those clips. I don't know if you've ever seen those just comedic pulls of clips from the telenovelas.
No.
Oh, I will send you one. They're ridiculous. I will send you a couple clips. I will email them to you and Eric from YouTube. Some of them are just insane. Like you won't even believe it. It's crazy. But then, you know, then you have to remember crazy soap operas in the 80s, right? And so Kaz is not really thrilled that mom is back. And then, you know, mom is like, well, we got to go back and finish this. Come on, you know, let's go and do this. And, you know, now's the time and we can make this right. And, you know, this is a good time for you. It'll be good for everybody. And Kaz is like, don't like, you are falling right back into where you were. And she's like, no, I've changed. I realized what's important and da da da. And he's like, your mother hasn't changed a bit. Your mother wants you back to finish.
Yeah, so the mom tells her that she has done the 2014 version of Gone Viral, and the record label wants her back now.
So Noni leaves, and he is not happy. Because he's like, well, I'm clearly not good enough. And so he pouts a little bit and chucks his Boy Scout bracelet into the ocean.
Yeah, well, I mean, she is trying to maintain the relationship while still going back to pursue her career, and he's having none of it. He essentially makes it it's me or them. He doesn't say those words, but that's his attitude. And when she is, of course, going to go pursue her career,
He makes a healthy choice for himself.
He does, but he's not nice about it.
No, but again, that's the temper coming out.
For sure.
Because again, it's somebody else controlling his destiny.
Mm-hmm.
He's not in the decision-making seat in any of what's going on.
Yep.
Because he has no sway at all at this point. He's just along for the ride, and now the ride is driving away from him. So he pouts, and then he goes back home.
How long do you think they were in Mexico together, by the way?
It was hard to tell, but I didn't think more than like 2 or 3 days.
Yeah, I mean, they don't talk about the passage of time, but
I mean, it was at least
maybe a week at the outside, right? Because he essentially just calls into work and says, can you cover for me? I need a few days.
Yeah. And like the first 24 hours there, that he makes a big point because they have the three meals stacked up on the table, right? Where she slept through, you know, here was lunch, here was dinner, and now it's breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have that really uncomfortable scene where she's clipping her fake nails off.
Yeah.
Like the extensions, which I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
Oh, it just gave me like, ugh, I couldn't watch. So he goes back to work and they're kind of crazy, estranged. And
well, she and her mom go have the meeting with the record label.
Right.
And she had talked with Kaz about how she writes her own lyrics all the time, but
she keeps it in a box that nobody ever sees because she's not allowed to write her own stuff.
Yeah. And so when they're at the meeting saying with the record label and saying they want her to come back and they want to have this huge release and it's going to be the biggest ever, she says that she has a song that she's written that she wants on the album, and that's the only way she'll do it. And for once in her whole life, her mother actually stands up for her instead of just pushing her career along, and says, yeah, okay. I mean, this was a surprise to the mother in the moment.
It was a surprise to all of us, I think.
Yeah. But the mother backs her up and says, yeah, if she doesn't get the song, there's no deal. And we find out that she had actually been officially fired, which the head of the label didn't know. They thought she was still under contract. So that gave them the leverage to demand that she got her song on and have the dickhead executive who kept trying to delay her record, got him fired. A very sports movie kind of moment right there.
Yeah.
But that's not the kind of movie this is, as it turns out. Because we find out in a subsequent scene that her mother actually didn't care about her getting a song on the label. She just wanted to get that dude fired.
Yeah, and she just wanted douchebag gone.
Yeah, and then in fact tells her that she can't delay the album to get her own song on because that'd be bad for her career. So it's just not going to happen.
And it's already done. So we, yep. we got, just tough this out and then we'll drop a single, right?
Mm-hmm.
We'll just do that next. Don't worry about it. You can do whatever you want. Make three of them.
Yeah.
And that doesn't end that doesn't end well for her mother.
Nope.
Because Noni she's had it. She realizes that Kaz was right, that mom is running everything and she's never going to break free. And so she breaks free. She fires her mom.
Yep. One betrayal too far.
Yeah, so she's just like, and they have a big altercation, and then her mother, the dramatic where her mother slaps her, which is like, oh, that was so, that's so cliche, that's so predictable, right? Which was, I think, one of the few missteps in this movie. It's like, that was gratuitous. It didn't need to be. It didn't make me hate her mother any more than I already did. So then Noni goes to find Kaz, and he is headed to beg for more money. She's
back on the campaign trail because by standing up for her at the BET Awards, he might have burnt his bridges with the pastors, but the youth movement loves him.
Yeah, which is unfortunately probably not far from what would happen. In our current political landscape.
Yeah. His dad does not want him to pursue that. His dad wants him to repair his image first.
Yeah.
And he actually takes agency of his career and says, nope, let's go for it.
Yep. And Noni tries to schmooze her way, and he's like, nope, good to see you, but now I'm out of here. Bye.
Yeah.
And so
gives her the stiff arm.
Yeah.
That was one of the moments where I was like, no, I don't like this. this is not how these two need to end up.
The movie took another turn, which again, it almost pivoted to the cliche, and then it had a good bit of misdirection because you and I had the same expectation. Mm-hmm. But then the movie, like, he drives away.
Yeah.
Which I was like, oh no, go back. And she's very lost. And so,
yeah. In fact, when he was getting fitted for his suit and got the call from the woman, the domestic violence woman from the earlier call, from the earlier scene, he had given her his card and told her to call him at any time. Mm-hmm. And he got the call and he went. And in his civvies, he showed up, and I was pretty sure he was gonna get killed.
That's what I thought too.
Mm-hmm. But no, he gets shot at by the husband who he had or boyfriend who he had arrested previously,
and beats the crap out of him.
Yeah, and then at the hospital, his dad picks him up, and they actually have like a really nice, caring father-son conversation, essentially telling him to, you know, follow and do what's going to make him happy.
Yeah, his dad finally kind of lets him know why his dad was doing what his dad was trying to do for him. Mm-hmm. And he says, yeah, but that's not what I want. And so his dad relents and says, I wasn't trying to make you live my life. I just wanted something better for you. So do what's better for you. So that was kind of nice. Again, it was not a big scene, but important.
Yeah, and Danny Glover was great.
Yeah. And so what is the next piece?
Noni goes back to her hometown. Gets her hair done.
Yeah, and she has an interview at some point, right, where she confesses what really happened.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're right.
Because
Don Lemon, and Eric's favorite.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not comfortable with this happening anymore either, where real journalists are fake movies. So, but I get it.
Yeah, this movie had Don Lemon, Gail King.
Yeah. So she confesses, like, no, I tried to kill myself.
Yeah. Next question. And it was very heartfelt, and she's back to keeping her natural hair.
Yeah.
Out in public now.
And he sees this on TV.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she says she's gonna go do a music festival in her hometown. And so she goes back, and one of the through lines I really like in this movie is the hairdresser from when she was a kid, her mom like ambushed the hairdresser at the end of the day. We didn't mention this before, but it was funny that the next day of the talent show, that same hairdresser was had accompanied the mom to watch the girl sing. Then all these years later, she goes back home and has her hair done almost in the exact same style by that same hairdresser. Who, you know, is now kind of her surrogate mom because she left her mom back in L.A. And is helping her get ready for her big solo performance at this music festival where she's going to sing an original song that she wrote.
And she gets all ready and she gets to go on stage and Kaz shows up.
Of course he does. He's there in his grandpa sweater. He looks great.
And he flew there.
Yep.
They have that little quippy line where he's like, well, it wasn't as nice as when we were on a plane.
Right.
So, and then he, you know, she drags him up on stage and then she does her performance and, you know, has her whole experience.
Yeah, it's a very feel-good ending.
With a little crowd surfing.
Mm-hmm. Yep, it's probably the cheesiest part of the whole movie.
Without a doubt.
Yeah, but it was fine. I thought it was well earned.
Yeah. After all, with the rest of the tension in this movie that happened and the other emotional manipulation, this is fine. It was a fine ending.
It was a relief.
Yeah.
It was definitely a relief.
I don't know how else you could have ended it, though. I mean, it would have been almost insulting to do something. Like, the plot twist would have been too infuriating had they tried to make some in Night Shyamalan crap happen, right?
Well, here's what I was afraid was going to happen that would have really pissed me off. Kaz gets shot and killed by the domestic violence dude. And his death becomes the final push that she needs to gain the confidence to sing her own songs. So the first song she sings is one that she wrote in his honor.
I would not
have been happy with an ending like that.
But in a much lesser movie, that's exactly what would have happened. You're right.
Yeah.
Also, we've seen movies similar to that. But that's because they're cliche, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they sell. So that was this movie in a very roundabout nutshell. And we're sorry, Brother E, because you had to work around all kinds of our craziness in between.
Our 20-minute interlude.
Let's see if I can get. So, budgeted at $7 million. Opening weekend, it made $6 million. Worldwide gross, $14 million. So, it made money. Not a big production, but doubled its budget. So that's something, right?
Yeah. So this writer director, Gina Prince Bythewood, she also wrote and directed a movie called Love and Basketball, which I haven't seen, but is I believe well regarded. And then she also.
The Secret Life of Bees?
She directed a movie called The Old Guard, which showed up on Netflix this year. I assume you didn't watch it. It was an action movie starring Charlize Theron. I would never have guessed that the same director did both movies.
What was the name of it?
The Old Guard. It's about a group of mercenaries who are immortal. Pretty fun movie, but it's like most Netflix originals. It's kind of empty calories. It's enjoyable in the moment, but completely forgettable.
Oh, I have seen the previews for this. It's on my list, actually. I added it to my list to watch.
I mean, I don't think you'll be mad about it.
It looked middle of the roadish.
Yeah, I think it's better than middle of the road, but not much.
And it has the guy's name I can't pronounce that I've seen in other things. Chiwetel Ejiofor.
Yes,
I've seen him in other things. I think.
Yeah. He's good.
He's playing Doctor Strange.
No, he is.
He plays Mordo.
Yeah,
Doctor Strange in the multiverse. All right.
Mordo is Doctor Strange's nemesis.
He plays Scar the Lion King in 2019's Lion King.
Mm-hmm.
Sherlock Gnomes.
It's a cartoon.
Oh dear, that's unfortunate.
Well, he's got a fantastic voice, so as much voice work as he wants to do, I'm here for.
He's been a great deal of stuff.
Yeah, he works.
Salt. That's probably where I saw him.
He was
Children of Men. Oh, okay.
Wasn't he in Firefly? Didn't he play like a space ninja in Firefly?
I've never watched Firefly.
Oh.
I have it.
It's real good.
He was in Serenity.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So the movie follow-up.
Yeah, I've watched a couple episodes of Firefly, and it just didn't, I don't know, it didn't click.
It's good.
I hear that. And I like Nathan Fillion, but I something about it, I may not have been in the right mindset. So it's on my list of stuff to watch. So, but I digress. So, this movie's probably a B movie, B plus probably. I would give it an A except for the fact that it is a cliche movie. It is a movie, like I said earlier, it's a movie I've seen before. I've seen lesser versions of this movie, and this is a better version of this movie than the other cliches, but it was still a story that I'm not unfamiliar with. But this one was perfectly fine. Again, well-acted. It moved. It looked good. It was a pretty movie. It had some great camera shots. It had some great angles and some interesting choices.
Yeah, we didn't even talk about how the movie was shot. It's really shot like almost like with a documentary style, you know, very, very static camera shots, kind of grainy. Like it's not a crisp looking movie up until they get to Mexico, when it's really bright and crisp and vibrant.
I think that was on purpose to make LA look, was it LA? I think it was LA, right?
I thought so. Yeah.
Yeah. I think they were trying to make it look, you know, kind of just seedy and
yeah,
and grimy, which if you've been to LA, that's not far from the truth. So, of course I haven't been to LA in a while. So yeah, I mean, it's a fine movie. I mean, it's, if you want to watch it, because you want something to watch for a couple hours that isn't a constant kick to the junk, then this is a good movie. I mean, it's going to manipulate you emotionally a little bit, but not to the point of where you're going to be like wallowing in a crawled up mass in the corner of your room. So
I really like this movie. I enjoyed it a lot more than I expected to. I think I like it even better after chatting with you about it. I watched this last night with my wife. I don't know if she liked it because she stayed up for the whole movie and watched it to the end.
I also watched it last night. So,
and one of my favorite things about this movie is we were probably about 25 minutes into it, and I could just tell she was just kind of looking at this movie like, "What the fuck is this?" And she's like, "You're watching this for your podcast?" I was like, "Yep." She's like, "Who picked this?" I was like, "Guess it's either me or Jason." And she thought about it for a good long time. She's like, "I have no idea. I can't see either of you picking this movie."
I was surprised when I first thought I had the wrong movie. I thought, and because when it opened too, because the opening kind of threw me, because it had a very, the open of the movie had a very different beginning. I almost expected it, because I didn't know anything about this movie going into it. I went in completely blind. So I expected there to be some like horrific alien abduction or some terrible car crash right out of the gate. Like I just expected, because I expected this to not be what it was. And I was pleasantly surprised. So I'm not complaining, but I just, it never entered my mind what was really happening until it started happening. And then the talent show is when I was like, "Oh man, this is going to be just a constant, I'm going to cry." So I didn't, I was good, but, so yeah. Well, what did she think of the movie?
She loved it. She was really impressed by it.
Oh, good. Well, so that's, so you would say.
She did not cry during Blackbird, but yeah, I think it was pretty close.
Oh, so you would say it was worth it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I would recommend this movie to anybody, especially if you can talk them into watching it just the way you did, completely cold.
I think so. I'm glad I went in and do it cold.
Because when the movie cuts from the end of the opening scene, when little Noni is driving away with her lunatic mother, and then it cuts to like her very raunchy music video as a grown up Noni, like with no explanation. That's a really wild way to begin this movie.
And I didn't even mention the thing that actually made me laugh out loud, and I had to pause the movie for a couple minutes because I was afraid I was going to miss. This was a movie where I wanted to make sure I heard all the dialogue because I knew it was all important. Because I don't think there was really anything that was you couldn't throw much away from this.
Yeah, I mean, Kaz says maybe 100 words in the whole movie.
But after she's come off the balcony the next morning and there's breakfast and her mom like takes the hash browns in a big napkin and pulls them off her plate.
Oh yeah.
I was like, oh, this is the kind of this is the kind of mother she is. All right.
Well, combined, the two leads probably had between them like 4% body fat.
Yeah. they were nice to look at, so you know.
Yeah.
Mission accomplished. So, all right. So, anything else on the movie you'd like to discuss?
No. Thanks for bearing with me. I know this one is a departure from our norm. So.
No. Hey, sometimes the departures are the best ones.
But I was inspired by your pick of Ghost. So, figured this would follow that one. Yeah, it's just going to be a theme. The only movies you and I talk about from now aren't going to be romances.
God. Let's hope not. Housekeeping. Do you have any housekeeping?
I'm excited about your house. I was looking over your home inspection. It looks pretty good.
I don't know if you were able to check out the 3D link I sent you.
I was playing around with it on my phone, which is not probably the best way to look at it.
No, because if you look at it on your computer, you can actually go in a virtual tour and actually walk through my house. And it is actually my house. It's not like some model. Yeah. It is actually my house because you're looking out the window. I don't know what magic voodoo they use, but I was freaking out. I'm like, this is crazy. Like you can see out the windows and stuff and oh, it's crazy. So, the little 3D thing was kind of, I was like, what is going on here? Home inspection went fine. Little stuff. And the home inspector was, because we were there for it. Jesse and I were there for it. The real estate agent was paranoid about germs, which is fine. So she stayed in her car. He was like, it's a 6-year-old house, so it's got 6-year-old house problems, and they're all very normal and minimal, and nothing that I would even be concerned about. A couple of things need to be taken care of, like the roof needs treated for moss, which we live in Oregon. He goes, every roof needs treated for moss.
Yeah. I just have to do that this year.
He recommended doing it 3 times a year.
3 times a year?
Yeah.
Oh.
Once in the fall when the rains start, once in the spring when the rains start, and in the middle of the summer if we have a lot of rain. So there's a theme. He said, you know, you can get away with it once a year, but if you want your roof to last a couple, 2-3 times a year. And so I was like, okay, well, we're taking note of that because the roof is 6 years old and we'd like it to last more than 6 years more. So, nothing major in the property, you know, just little stuff like, you know, doorknobs needed tightened up, cupboard doors needed tightened up. You know, there's a crack in the foundation, but he said it's a concrete crack that is just a normal concrete crack because concrete cracks. And he goes, I wouldn't even seal it. It's not even a big enough crack to seal. So was in the crawl space and the crawl space was dry. And so he didn't see anything down there. He said there's a little moisture down there, but he said, I think that's from when they were building the house because it's Oregon and it was probably raining when they were building the house. So he goes, the moisture that's down there doesn't look like it's new. There's no water coming in from outside. So he goes, and there was some sawdust down there. So It's obvious they used sawdust to kind of suck up the water and things like that, which is fine. The crawl space is awkward to get into, and I will never be going down there ever. So my boyfriend Jesse was instructed by the inspector guy, because he's like, here's how you get in. And he was trying to tell me, and I'm like, nope, don't tell me. Tell this guy. And then the furnace is in the attic.
Oh, interesting.
So I guess that's really common in newer construction. I don't know why. Maybe because of ducting, and I don't know. Anyway, so it was weird. That's weird. It's a forced air system, which is I prefer. It's air conditioner ready, so it has all the condensate lines and ducting ready, because it's already forced air. So we just have to really buy a compressor and get it charged if we want air conditioning. The pad's already ready and put out, and
that's great.
So everything's ready, and so that's, that'll be weird. But other than that, he's like, no, he goes, you got a great pick. You're at the end of the street and you got nothing past. And, you know, I think I sent, I don't know if I sent you the picture, but there's like cows and horses out my window. So,
yep. You have excellent water pressure.
So he tested it, and it, normal water pressure minimum's 40, maximum's 80, and we're at 60.
Yeah. That's great.
Yeah. I'm not wild about the hot water heater, because we haven't had a hot water heater for a long time. So that may be the first major investment, is switching over to a tankless. But, you know, it's going to be different space. It's going to be figuring out where we put stuff and what we do with stuff. And it'll be different.
Yeah, everything looks pretty nice and new.
Oh, it is. It will be the nicest place I will ever have lived, by far. No insult to anywhere else I've ever lived, but it's just, it's certainly, yeah, it's crazy. I don't even know how I got as lucky as I did. So, but I will say that my stack of papers that are here, these are the 21 houses I physically looked at.
That's pretty good.
So I have a stack of them, and this is in the neighborhood that the very first house I wanted out of when we started looking in the beginning of this process. I specifically wanted a house because of where it was at. We wanted this house, and when we drove out there, the real estate agent, this is the first house we found. She's like, go look at it. She didn't like that it was in Sandy, and we drove out to look at it, and Jesse and I both just like loved the neighborhood, and it was right where we would want to live. And we got back home and talked to the real estate agent. She goes, yeah, the house has already got an offer. And so we were totally bummed. And then we lost the neighborhood, and we've been looking and looking and looking. This house I just stumbled on. And I think we were all on the podcast last week, right?
Yeah. When you said you were going to go look at it.
I was going to go look at it. And then
it's happened fast, by the way.
It did happen fast, because it hadn't even been on the market a day. And
so now you are the guy that crushed somebody else's dream.
I was. So we showed up, and when I showed up, for this house, I thought there was already there was a different real estate agent there with a guy showing the house. And I thought, oh crap, I'm not getting this house. That's the first thing I thought, this is never going to happen. And my real estate agent said, and it was like 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and she said, our appointment's at 2, those people need to be the hell out of the house. Like, this is our time. And, and we waited a couple, 4 or 5 minutes, and she goes, nope, screw this. And she walks up to the house and bangs on the door. And she's like, are you guys, what's going on? It's 2 o'clock. And they're like, oh, we're sorry. And she kind of cornered me. She goes, that means they're, if the fact that the real estate agent is dragging this guy means the guy is interested, like he's going to make an offer probably. So she goes, I want you to stand close to them when they're talking, because they're going to probably talk in the driveway for a couple of minutes, and just kind of eavesdrop. And I'll get the key back from the lockbox after he puts it in the lockbox, because he can't give her the key, you know, it has right. to be locked and they have to unlock. So all this, whatever. So I'm standing there pretending to look at things in the roof line and look at the, and basically they're talking about, the real estate agent guy was telling this other guy, like, well, you need to go find a credit union or a bank and get a loan, and you need to do this and all these things. And
he was not ready.
And so Karen, my real estate agent, came back and we went in the house and we were, and so she goes, so what's going on? And I said, he doesn't have financing. And she was like, and then she like punches me on the shoulder and she goes, this is why I told you to get everything done up front. See, we are ready to go. I was like, I understand. And by the way, I listened to you and got everything ready. So,
and I'm also there. Don't touch me.
Oh yeah. In the days of COVID. So, so there ended up being three offers for the house. The price wiggled a little bit, not a lot. And then, basically what it came down to was, I was the only one out of the three offers that had funding in place.
Oh, like, wow.
I'm the only, so the other two didn't have, they weren't pre-qualified or even pre-approved. So we decided to put the offer in and close November 30th, which is probably the worst possible thing that's going to happen. Because if we do come to Alaska, then it's, if my mortgage starts in January, it's going to be very difficult because we will either have to move in like 4 days at the end of December after we've come back from Alaska, because we can't move before. There's just
not enough time.
There's probably enough time, but I was talking to Mom today. I said, I'm more worried about my stress level and getting myself sick and run down before I come to Alaska. And with the paranoia and COVID, I don't want to be run down and sick coming on a plane. So it'll be what it is. It'll really come down to what, you know, the first date of my mortgage is. So, we're trying to figure out what we're going to keep and what we're not, and where. So it's just going to be stuff. So we've already decided we're going to kind of take a bunch of stuff, stuff that we will keep, but not stuff that we need. And we'll move that over before we leave for Alaska. So like all the extra clothes we don't need, they don't need to stay here. They can go to the new house. All the books off of my bookcases can be put in boxes and they can go to the new house. All my extra pots and pans, they can go to the, like, they can sit in the house. Like, there's no, like, we can move all that stuff early.
Is that house currently occupied?
It is completely empty.
Oh, wow.
So, so when we get the keys on the 30th, like, we're good to go. So, you know, I figured we would put a bunch of stuff that's easy stuff and get that out of the way as much as we could before we left. And then we'll worry about the big stuff when we come back.
How long of a drive is it from your current place?
It's about a half an hour.
Okay. So, yeah, you can make multiple trips in a day.
Yeah. I mean, it would not be ideal. But also, Jerry said she's going to come up and help, and she has a big truck. And I have a trailer hitch, so I might look into renting one of those trailer container things for a couple days. So we'll see how it works. You know, Jesse's got a huge family, and it isn't as if he just didn't help them move like three households. So I think they just moved one big house to a different big house, but he spent like 3 weekends up helping them move. So they will probably help us too.
Nice.
Although I'm really paranoid about people being around. So we'll see. Yeah. And then it's just going to be weird. It's just going to be weird to be in a new place.
I'm so excited for you.
I'll be excited when we're moved. Right now I just feel like throwing up most of the time. I'm just like,
I mean, I know you still have to close and go through the rest of the process and everything.
Well, my real estate agent said, because the appraisal got ordered, but my loan is at the underwriter, so the bank's already approved the process. And I've got the title back, the title stuff back.
And it's free and clear and everything?
Yep.
Nice.
And she said, with the down payment and the fact that we were all in place, the bank will just give us the house. They, I mean, we're no risk. There's no risk to the bank. So, you know, she goes, they want to get you done and going. And I got my rate locked in. So,
yeah, phenomenal rate.
I know. I'm like, I don't understand how any of this is working, but whatever. The bank did say that they're going to keep watching the rates. And if it goes down again, we'll, you know, even though they've locked me in, they might, you know, if it goes lower, we'll take a look. So,
nice.
I don't envision it going any lower, but
they're going to start to give you money.
Well, like the house inspector today said that they just refinanced their house. And they went from a 30 year to a 15 year, at 199.
Oh.
So he go, and so he said, our mortgage payments are $4 more than they were per month, but I'm also doing it in 15 years. So that's how much they save. So it's nuts. But the neighborhood seems really nice and quiet so far. And, you know, we don't have a lot of neighbors directly. And, you know, there's two huge dog parks and a people park. And it's in a great little area. It's not a big subdivision. It's not a big area. Sandy's not a big town, 11,000 people. So, yeah.
Decent crime rate.
What's that?
Decent crime rate.
Oh yeah. There's
all that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, unfortunately I suspect it's a very, very white little town. That's the only downside, is that there's probably no diversity at all, because of where it's at. So, I mean, that's unfortunate, but, you know, it has a Fred Meyer, it has a Safeway, it has a Walgreens. So we'll live. It's the same commute roughly for me. I'm just on the opposite side. So it'll be the same, it'll be the same time for me back and forth, unless I have to go downtown, and that's gonna suck, because my downtown commute would be closer to 45, 50 minutes. So give or take, but I say that, but I also go into work at 5:30 in the morning. So not necessarily, it really depends. So Jesse's commute's going to be 40 minutes or so. So he's not, he wasn't real thrilled with that until he saw the house today. And so now he's really kind of zen with it. So,
good. That's really good.
Fiber optic gigabit internet.
That's just unfair.
And it's municipal. It's run by the city of Sandy. So it's like $50 a month.
Wonder what it's like to like live in a real metropolitan area with real internet.
And this is a brand new subdivision. So it's, everything's fiber optics. And I think the reason that the neighborhood calls to me so much is because it really does harken back to my childhood, because everything's buried. The power lines are buried, right? Everything's underground. And everywhere else in Portland is not underground, and it's ugly, and there's power lines overhead, and I just hate it. I've hated it because it's just so blightful and ugly. But this reminds me of home. It feels like home. And they just changed all their LED street lamps to be the good lamps that don't light pollute and all this garbage. So, my water bill is going to be a third of what it is now. So it'll be nice. It'll be a life change for us, because we will not have the instant availability to a lot of the Portland stuff that we enjoy now. It's going to take us 45 minutes to an hour to get to the airport when we need to. So that's going to be sucky. But, you know, I won't have to worry about getting evicted, and, you know, this is, I guess, part of being an adult. And as I told Jesse when he was talking about commuting, I said, I'm trying to convince myself that this is what we need to do now so that I get in the habit of commuting to work. Because when we move back to Alaska, I will absolutely end up being commuting for work. There will be no way that I will be able to afford to live where I work, probably. So just, I think the reality is, they said, as long as I start training myself now for the commute, I will transition better when we move. So,
there are days when I try and talk myself into moving out to Willow permanently. That would be a tough commute once we're back at work, but.
Are you really, I mean, here's the thing though. Are you really going to go back to work? I mean, are things, I don't know that things are ever going to go back to the normal that we had.
Oh no, I work for COVID deniers. I'm supposed to be back at work right now. And if I did not have one, kids who I needed to help with school because they can't go to school, or two, an underlying medical condition, I would be expected to be back at work right now.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah.
Although I say this as a person that has had to report to work every day anyway, so I don't have a choice. Like, now luckily I can, in my job, I'm able to telecommute a couple of days a week. But I have to be able to go into the office a couple of days a week too. So it's a hard balance. It's going to be, I don't know, numbers are not good. So I'm really paranoid.
Yeah.
And then on the flip side, I'm trying not to buy any groceries. I'm trying to burn down everything we have in the house so we don't have to move as much shit. So it's going counter to my, I need to have a stocked pantry life that I know completely from our mother. So I'm trying to resist very desperately to stock up my freezer and stock up my pantry. And it's really difficult because in the panic of COVID and people running out of things and,
I know, you start to get the sweats when you find out you only have 6 more cans of olives left.
Well, and for us, because I buy green beans and canned green beans and canned peas for dog food supplement. And we couldn't get them for several weeks because everybody was buying every bit of canned food they could find for a while. So since things have returned to some stability, like I have enough canned green beans and canned peas in the basement here right now to last us through the end of January.
By the way, I feel bad now. I shouldn't have said that I work for a COVID denier. That's probably not fair.
I understand.
I just believe they could be doing a lot more than they are to help all employees understand how to better avoid community spread.
Do you have a lot of workers that work face to face?
When we are in the office currently, we do have a mask policy. Not that everybody adheres to it 100% of the time, but unless you are alone in your office, you are expected to be wearing a mask. Although there is some thought that you can be in a conference room and spread out 6 feet apart and take off your mask. I don't subscribe to that thought, but, there are some people who are comfortable doing that. I wish they wouldn't, but
That would not be me.
Yeah, well, not me either. And then there are the people who think that if they go into your office and they're not in the hallway, then you can both take off your masks. I'm like, nope, that's the exact wrong thing. That's opposite. But we also have lots of field locations, and I think for our field locations we're actually doing a really good job because we have lots of testing requirements before people go out to the remote locations, and we've set up rapid testing stations, so we've had a few positives here and there, But we've got quarantine areas set up at our field locations too, so we can help contain it and get people the treatment they need and separate them from the rest of the population. But yeah, my personal thoughts are that I think we found back in March and April and most of May that we could be effective telecommuters for the folks who work in the home office. But that sentiment is not shared by the folks that run the business. So
it's interesting. Because for a long time, I know my organization we didn't telecommute, right? And now they're rethinking that because it turns out some of us are more productive telecommuting. My productivity is definitely up when I'm telecommuting. I mean, I shouldn't say it's up. I'm able to work as effectively at home as when I'm in the office. I'm not deterred by being at home, but I also don't have things like children that distract me. So, I'm lucky in that respect. Now, whether or not I'm still allowed to telecommute at some day when this is all over, I don't know. But I know that some of our departments entirely have just decided that they are never going to return to the office. They're always going to be telecommuting.
Yeah, I mean, I think my preference, if things were normal, my preference would still be to go into the office. I think it's easier to work in the office, and you know, it's way easier to be collaborative with my team members in the office. But you know, things aren't normal right now. So
no. Yeah. I don't know that normal's ever going to be the same normal it was. I don't think it's ever going to go back to that. We'll have a different normal, but it's not going to be what it was. So it's kind of like the post 9/11 syndrome, you know?
Yeah. I think if people start acting like we did pre-pandemic, I think we're doing it wrong.
Yeah. But we don't have a good history in this country of learning from our mistakes necessarily quickly. So I hope so, from a public health standpoint, because, you know, we can't go through this repeatedly. But, you know, things could be worse.
They will be.
Eric was talking about possibly, he and I were talking about maybe live streaming on Tuesday. I don't know how sober I'm going to be to do that, but I don't know. I don't know if I want to be online and yelling at my computer screen or not. So we'll see.
That's probably not a good idea.
I don't even know if we're going to know. Do you think we're going to know Tuesday?
Yeah, I do.
I mean, I hope and pray, but
I mean, there's going to be some percentage of people, including our current president, who are going to try and pretend like it's not a real result yet. But I think for the vast majority of people, it will be settled on Tuesday.
I can't believe the number of votes that have already happened. It's staggering.
Yeah.
So I guess that's a good sign. I'm glad that people are voting, and I'm not just saying that because Democrats tend to vote more by mail than anybody else, but I'm just glad to see people involved. So that gives me some hope with a lowercase h. So,
yeah, but I think
I would be lying if I didn't say I was nervous.
I'm still real nervous.
Oh, so nervous. But again, I've got white privilege, so I'm not. I guess I have the luxury of not being as nervous as potentially some other groups. So, But yeah. Also, I live in Portland, so who knows? You know,
I mean, just based on my occupation, I think I will be financially better off if Trump wins. But, you know, that's not going to mean much if our civilization goes down in flames. So
everything's just a big smoldering crater somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's so still a bitter pill.
Yeah, but you want your kids to grow up, so.
That'd be nice.
I think so too. I would hope. That's what I hope. That's what I'm, you know, that's what I worry about. And I'm not even their parents. So I can't imagine the weight that you and Jennifer feel. So my hat's off to you. Cause I would have worried myself into an asylum probably.
We're just trying to get them to make sure we turn in their math assignments every Friday. That's where we're at.
How is the homeschooling going? Is it pretty rough?
It's fine. We're all tired of it, though. The kids and the parents, we're all tired of it.
And both of the kids are still home?
Yeah. Yeah, they will be until January at the earliest.
Oh.
I think Journey might be going back next in a couple weeks here, but our school is not bringing anybody back until the new year at the earliest.
Oh, my hillbilly neighbors.
Trying to have a super spreader event?
They did. They had a party. They've had a party since 3 o'clock this afternoon.
Nice.
So, yeah, it's a big petri dish of filth, and there's no way they're social distancing, and I don't think most of them are wearing masks, so... Yeah. But to be honest, I don't like her, so, I mean, I shouldn't wish anything ill upon her, but, you know, we're moving, so I guess... I keep telling myself that we won't be here in a couple more months, so it really doesn't matter. I keep trying to, I cling to that. That's keeping me from being homicidal at this point is like, we're moving. Just remember we're moving.
When you end up hating your neighbors at every location you live in, look in the mirror. At least that's what my wife tells me.
Oh, I love my new neighbors cause they're cowies and horsies. So I'm thrilled as punch over that. And the rest of the neighbors I haven't seen them at all. So, and I've been there now 4 or 5 times. I've never seen any of them. But also the ones that I did see when I looked at the house last weekend was like the Stepford neighborhood. Because it was a bunch of middle-aged. No, they were younger than middle-aged. They were definitely not middle-aged. They were probably 20-something women, 20-something skinny women with multiple dogs.
Oh, nice.
And they were headed to the dog park. So I was like, oh, okay. So we'll have to go and introduce ourselves. This is the thing that I'm bad at is Jesse's like, we have to go and introduce ourselves to the neighbors. And I'm like, no, I don't want to. He's like, you need to make friends with the neighbors. I'm like, no, I don't want to meet them. I don't want to talk to them. I don't want to know anything. Like, no, don't make me. So he's going to pull me out of my shell, but I really don't want to.
That's smart.
So I'm going to make little goodie bags or something and he can go say hi and I will cower somewhere else. And then I was thinking, I'll just buy everybody like a bottle of wine or something. And then I have that thing where like, maybe they're alcoholics and I'm giving them alcohol. And, you know, then I have that paranoia, but maybe they're diabetic and I'm giving them candy. And then Jesse says, you know, you're crazy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And I don't know what your point is.
He's met you. He knows.
Yeah. I'm like, yeah, where have you been? So anyway, that's what fills me with anxiety is meeting the neighbors and being social and the inevitable. Let's have a block party, which makes my heart just.
Yeah. Nope.
Yeah. So, even before COVID, it would make my heart like implode. So I can't imagine. So it'll be fine, but it's just going to be a lot of things I am unaccustomed to. And I've been in my habit for 20 years. So it's going to be, I have to be open to new experiences for a little while until I can re-cocoon.
Oh, that's really an Anderson trait, because I've had very similar conversations with my wife. She's like, we got to go bake something for the neighbors. I'm like, no, because what if they reciprocate? She's like, oh. We want them to reciprocate. I'm like, no,
no,
you want them to. I don't.
I think the most, and I don't, this is maybe too much into my neuroses, but I don't want to eat food that other people have cooked for me that I don't know, that I'm not related to.
I don't either. I don't know what your kitchen looks like. I don't know what your kitchen habits are.
See, that's exactly me. I'm like, I know what my kitchen's like, and I don't know what your kitchen's like, and I can't. And Jesse's like, you eat at restaurants. I'm like, no, that's plausible deniability. They're health codes. Mm-hmm. So, which I worked at a restaurant, so I know that's a big fat lie. But anyway, I feel you there. The most awkward thing is when the neighbors bring something over, because then I'm like, I'm throwing this away as soon as you leave. Yep. I'm glad to know it's not just me. So apparently the crazy runs in our family.
Yeah, no, it makes sense.
But I did hear that you're going to have trick-or-treating at the folks' house.
We're doing like an egg hunt.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to mask up and do it.
Yeah, because Mom was telling me today that Dad was actually a little excited because he was helping with the candy and stuff, so.
I'm going to go over early and help him hide some eggs.
I thought, well, that's a good sign that he's into it.
Yeah.
So, like, okay. So, I'm glad that they'll have some experiences. I think it'll be good. I don't know what traveling is going to be like still. I don't know what December is going to be like. And I don't know if we'll be just quarantining at the cabin for 5 days while we're waiting. So, I don't know what's going to happen. It's all up in the air right now. So, no pun intended.
Well, you have to have a test before you come, right?
Who knows? Yes, in theory, but who knows what it's like in December if the numbers are high, that we may not be traveling at all. So
it's true.
I have the ability to get tested. I can get tested in 24 hours. So through not too many strings. So yeah, because I don't want to get tested in Anchorage because it's like $250-$300.
Yeah, we're really sticking it to the non-residents.
Yeah, so, but it's also, it'll be, you know, I already talked to Jesse. I'm like, we are going to be isolating before we ever leave. We are going to be in a quarantine before we leave. I am not going to be around anybody for a couple weeks. And then he pointed out to me, yeah, but you have to close on the 30th, so that's not going to happen. I'm like, oh, damn it.
Touché.
So, whatever. It'll be what it is. But next week. So, what is next week?
You and Eric?
I don't know what we're doing. I will have to figure it out. I'm sure I'll find something good. Take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast. We're going to leave it right here. Take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast. We're going to leave it right here. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies, they go off on a tangent flow and maybe rambling. That's the Brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away unless you're driving. Keep them open in that case. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey. Not in a creepy way. 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 Okay. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. We got Eric.